Bienvenidos a Se Habla Real Estate, el primer show en español con la misión de proveer a la comunidad hispana la mejor educación sobre dinero, bienes raíces y emprendimiento de una manera simple y práctica.
What's up, mi gente? Lennon Lee por aquí. Bienvenidos a otro episodio de Se Habla Real Estate, el show donde aprendemos cómo invertir, cómo hacer dinero invirtiendo en real estate y, pues, idealmente, cómo utilizar este poderoso vehículo para alcanzar la libertad financiera. Hoy tenemos una entrevista en inglés, una persona que trabaja con un equipo con el que yo también he trabajado, con el que hemos hecho varios proyectos y estoy muy interesado en esta conversación. Y bueno, looking forward para que todos aprendan un poco de Travis. Para darle un poquito de background sobre Travis, su nombre es Travis Watts, es un inversionista pasivo antes que nada. Ha invertido en real estate desde el 2009 en el área de multifamily, single family y renta de propiedades vacacionales. Hace un tiempo, ya un par de años, empezó invirtiendo con Ashcroft Capital, con quien ahora forma Travis forma parte del equipo de Ashcroft, primero como inversionista y luego como encargado de la parte de las relaciones con los inversionistas, lo que llamamos Investor Relations. Además de eso, Travis tiene una experiencia antes de todo esto en Wall Street, trabajando para un brokerage firm donde pues obtuvo su licencia de Serie 7, Serie 63, donde básicamente trabaja con este brokerage para levantar y trabajar con securities también. Hoy en día Travis se dedica a compartirse unos conocimientos con todas las personas pues en el mundo, aquí en Estados Unidos, que lo puedan escuchar. Especialmente le gusta enfocarse en estrategias para cómo invertir pasivamente en real estate. Dicho eso, y después de esas trabalenguas, vamos a darle a Travis la oportunidad de decirnos quién es. Travis, how's it going, man?
Lennon, I'm thrilled to be here. I think I understood about 10 words that you said.
Well, I got all confused, so I'm not sure people understood it either. So I'm gonna let you tell us a little bit about your background and you know your current focus. What's going on with Travis right now?
Sure. Yeah, happy to. Thanks again for having me on the show. Here's how I like to tell the story in a nutshell. I got started in real estate the way that a lot of people get started in real estate, which was through single family investing. So in 2009, when I bought my first investment property, if someone would have said, you know, apartment investor or multifamily, I just assumed that was somebody who was, you know, a billionaire or somebody with, you know, 40 years experience. I had no clue about anything outside of just my small context, so to speak. So, you know, I did all kinds of active strategies in the beginning, from house hacking, which is, you know, renting spare bedrooms out, to fix and flips, to vacation rentals. And about 5-6 years into that, chaos, so to speak, and working, by the way, in the oil industry, a W-2 job that was about 100 hours a week, give or take, about 14-hour days. I was out of state. I was overseas. I worked in the Middle East and in Saudi Arabia. So trying to balance all of that real estate with that kind of career was not sustainable. So I naively thought, well, hey, look, one day I'm just going to have, you know, 100 single family homes or something, and I'm going to retire and live the good life. Well, not even 20% of the way there, and I was completely burned out. You know, I didn't have any motivation left, any energy, any time. So in 2015, what happened is I really went back to the drawing board. I really had to look myself, you know, in the mirror and let go of ego and just say, look, you know, what's your highest and best potential? What should you really be doing? And also, how do I stay in real estate, but in a more passive way, right? In a hands-off type of approach. And so that's where I discovered becoming a limited partner in apartment syndications, you know, or real estate private placements. Mm-hmm. And so from 2015 through today, I completely transitioned 2015 and 16. I sold all my single family homes, everything I was doing that was active. I got rid of all of it. And I went 100% into multifamily and syndication investing. So done, I don't even know how many, 35 deals, give or take, in the space with a whole bunch of different operators, the largest being Ashcroft Capital, as I think I heard you say in the intro.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've invested in several of their deals. And I joined forces with them last year in 2019 to become part of their investor relations team. And really, that was about helping educate and reach people to explain the passive side of this business. Because as you know, most of the marketing and the advertising and the courses and the programs and the books are about the active side of this business. You know, do your own deal and become a syndicator, which is all fine and well, but that's not what I wanted. That's not what I wanted to do. And so I'm out here trying to advocate for the passive side of the business. And that's really what my passion is.
That's awesome, man. I'm with you. I'm on board. Actually, what we do as well is trying to be as passive as we can, and add value, educate our investors on the same side with our company, which is not through Seabla Real Estate, but that's what we do. We have the same focus. I think we have the same passion about educating people about the benefits, about actually achieving financial freedom with real estate, which a lot of the times it's, well, yeah, real estate is the most powerful vehicle for you to become wealthy and for you to become rich and this and that. But I think a lot of us don't really, I mean, I want to be wealthy and rich if that's possible, right? But that's not necessarily their priority. We're looking for freedom, right? And that I'm talking, when I say we, I'm talking about my family more than anything, and a lot of my investors as well, right? So when I say we, it's that, and it's like, well, it's about passive, it's about financial freedom. So if you're going to be super wealthy operator in real estate, then yeah, you can be rich and wealthy, but not necessarily you're going to have all the time in your hands and have the time freedom to just, you know, spend it with the family, right? So real estate can give you both, you know, together or separately, but you can definitely have both the real estate. But again, back to the focus, passive investing and syndications, that's been, that was like, what was your aha moment that told you, well, you know what, this is the route and I'm going to now invest in 35 syndications? Why?
Yeah, I think that, you know, going back to the education board, so to speak, right? Like reading books, listening to podcasts, looking at data, statistical analysis, whatever. What that taught me all in all is, you know, the proof was in the numbers. Let's just put it that way. So what I had to take a look at is stacking up what I was currently doing, which was single family homes versus investing in multifamily. So I had to look back at 2008, 2009, 2010 case studies, what happened to multifamily apartments versus single family homes. Right. Additionally, I found several mentors who had been doing this way longer than me. I mean, at the time I was brand new to it, right? But some folks that were in their 60s and 70s that had done, you know, 100 plus LP deals. And to be able to pick their brain and to walk through this and for them to kind of open up and share some insights about their portfolio and experience really, you know, set home with me. And I think initially, if we back up before that, if we just talk about real estate in general, it was things like learning statistics. I'm making this statistic up because I don't remember the exact percentage, but it's like, you know, 80% of millionaires own real estate. Well, okay, so if you have an ambition to have wealth, then maybe real estate is something you should put on your radar then to learn about, right?
Yeah.
So those are some of the foundational things. And of course, the Robert Kiyosaki books and all of that, the cash flow quadrant was huge in allowing me to recognize that, you know, maybe I don't want to just be an employee the rest of my life. Maybe I want to be an investor at some point. And so starting that journey from the E quadrant to the I quadrant, those familiar with cash flow quadrant, were some of the foundational things. And quite frankly, I know I skipped over a lot of, you know, my background there and that transition point, but here was the bottom line. I was doing flips and vacation rentals and whatnot as a complete amateur.
Right.
You know, I didn't have the right team, the right structure, the right mentors. I'm out there just, you know, winning some, losing some. I'm butchering it up. And I just shouldn't have been doing it, quite frankly. You know, I should have been more on the passive side. Right. And I had to get real with myself. I had to just look at the facts and just say, you know, maybe this isn't my um, my skill set, to speak. So yeah, that's kind of what prompted it.
So yeah, no, but I get it, right? Because a lot of us, that's how we start. Because yeah, you reach that poor dad, and you read all these numbers, right? 80% of millionaires, or whatever the number is, own real estate, and or at least hold their wealth in real estate. And you say, well, okay, I know real estate is a good vehicle. We understand it, right? We know how it works. It's fairly simple. So we know that it's an asset class that we want to invest in. But normally it's like, well, what does that mean? Well, either I buy a bunch of single families and I rent them out and I manage that portfolio. And obviously you have the issues of scale and this and that. But you can, you know, a lot of people do that and they do fine. Or you just do house flipping, or if you don't have any money, then you start doing wholesaling or whatever it is. You know you want to be in real estate, but what do you really want? And I think it goes back to what I was saying. Like, are you looking for time freedom, or are you looking to have a business that you operate in this and grow into a million-dollar company? It's not necessarily the same thing, right? How does that look for you in terms of again, that aha moment when you realize, well,
yep,
this is truly passive. Or actually, let's formulate it this way. Why is, apartment syndications or private placements for individual investors like we are a good vehicle or a good option when you know you want to be in real estate, but you don't want to be active as a landlord, if you will?
Yeah, it's a great point. I was actually just, because we were on the topic here of Robert Kiyosaki, I was listening to Robert speak earlier this year at a live event, and somebody asked him or alluded to, basically labeled him as a real estate guy. And he says, look, he said, it's not about being a real estate guy. It's just that real estate holds a lot of advantages between, to your point, scalability, using other people's money, using debt, using leverage, the tax advantages you get, the cash flow that comes from it, the fact that it's tangible and real. You can touch it, see it, feel it. You can repurpose it for, he goes on and on to paint the picture of, if you took all those same advantages and you moved it to something else and the government says now, if you invest in this, you get all the same benefits. Well, he would do that,
Forget real estate, right? Is what vehicle has those advantages? It doesn't. Yeah.
And like I always joke about, if multifamily in 20 years from now, if our cash flow yields have dropped all the way down to 2 and 3% cash flow, I'm not going to be in the asset class. I'm going to be chasing wherever the yield is at that point. If I can go buy a municipal bond that's tax-free, that gives me 5%, I'm going to do that. That just would make sense as far as a vehicle. But to your point, in 2020, I think personally, my opinion is that multifamily is one of the best, if not the best, risk-adjusted return that you can have. And that stays true to the institutional players and the mom and pops and the Main Street investors like us. And, this has just come from so much self-study, so many books and podcasts and meeting people and joining groups. And by the way, at one point in my time, I worked at a brokerage firm and I did the stocks, bonds, mutual fund stuff. And I was able to stack that up against real estate because at that time, I was actually mostly in real estate. And it felt like a conflict of interest for me personally, to my spirit. So I had to pull the plug and say, real estate won, in my opinion, and I went with it. But I would encourage anyone who's on the fence or doesn't quite understand some of these things that we're talking about, just study, just self-study, just learn as much as you can. There's Harvard review studies on what multifamily did in the last recession and just get to know the facts. And then as you start stacking that up against other investment vehicles, you might come to the same conclusion.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned risk-adjusted returns. That's something that I always talk about, definitely to my investors. What does that mean for those that are listening that don't really understand the term?
Yeah, so every investment you make has a certain degree of risk. And so, technically or hypothetically speaking, the lower risk stuff has a lower return. So if you want to go get a CD from your bank or put your money in the bank and make 0.2%, pretty conservative that you're not going to lose your capital, right? It's very low risk, but it's very low return. Equally so, let's say that I had become a day trader and I trade stocks for a living. Well, is it possible I might make a 50% annualized return 1 year? Absolutely. People do that. Is it also equally so that I might lose 50% of my portfolio? Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so that's the risk. And so you have to define this for yourself as where do you stand on the risk scale? How much risk are you willing to accept for the return that you're going to get? So multifamily provides to me a solid return on investment, an annualized yield with taking little risk, not no risk, but little risk compared to day trading or investing in cryptocurrency or other things that you could park money into. It's just more stabilized and secure and conservative, I guess. And again, these are just my opinions and my conclusion to what I've come to, but it's just come from being immersed in the business and in these investments for years now, and then leveraging folks that have been doing it 30, 40 years and picking their brain as well.
Yeah, definitely. That's I couldn't agree more. For those of you that want to get a little bit more nerdy with all that, there's something called the Sharpe ratio, which basically calculates the volatility and the risk of those investments. So basically, the higher the Sharpe ratio, and you can figure that. I'm not going to get into the formula or anything, but the higher the Sharpe ratio, the better the investment is in terms of risk or less risk at risk adjusted return. So anyway. Just homework for those of you that want to go and look into that. So, okay, understanding that investing in multifamily and commercial multifamily, that is, large apartment complexes, through this vehicle of private offerings for accredited and even non-accredited investors as well. So basically for everyone out there that's sophisticated, how do you get started, right? Like, because I understand that makes sense. And I know I want to be in that asset class, but how do I go about it, right? Like, should I just invest with someone that I just met, or how do I, prepare myself to start deploying my capital into this investment? Or how did you do it, actually? That's the better question.
Yeah. Well, I'll share how I did it, but I'm not recommending anyone do what I did, but happy to share. So what I would recommend, I'll start with that, is that in this particular niche and asset class, the education needs to be the first thing. So whether it's just simply a podcast like this, whether it's reading a book on apartment syndications, you need just a foundational level of understanding of what this stuff is. From there, it's highly personal, really. So the way I did it is I started working with local operators in my own region, so to speak, that were doing these deals. For some reason, I thought that would be important, that they were just close and local. Turns out I never actually met with them or talked to them after I made the investment. So it really wasn't that important. That's why I don't recommend it. But if someone happens to be in your own neighborhood or backyard, that's cool. If you like what they're doing and things make sense. But the biggest lesson learned is it's all about the team. So there's three areas of risk, generally speaking. There's the team, the operator, the people that are actually executing the business plan on your behalf as a limited partner. There's the market that you're investing in, and then there's the deal itself. So to me, the most important is the team. It's their experience, their track record, their philosophy, their communication. Do you get along with them? Does the business plan make sense? Is it realistic? Are they being conservative? That stuff is number one. And then number two is the market. And I say that because I invested initially with a group that didn't have the experience, didn't have the track record, all these things, but they did buy a very good asset in a very good market at a very good time. And we all made money as limited partners, but literally the group could not execute the business plan whatsoever. They made just about every mistake you could make, and they ended up selling early, and we just exited the deal. But hey, I can't complain too much. We made a profit.
Right.
So the market really has a lot to do with a lot of things. And then the deal, of course, itself, but this is the problem that I see a lot of people make, and myself included, is analysis by paralysis on the deal. So you're sitting there and you look at all these numbers and you're crunching all this stuff and you're you know, trying to understand why they did this and why this. And it just, you know, at the end of the day, it's hard to make a decision that way. And even if it's a good deal, like the actual building structure is good, but the team is incompetent, yeah, it doesn't matter. You know, you're not actually going to get that projected return anyway. So just forget about the deal. And so that's kind of how I put those in a hierarchy.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was definitely gonna ask you about the underwriting part, because a lot of I also tell some of my investors that they just don't have the time, they don't have the interest, the knowledge, the will, if you to just sit down and underwrite these deals thoroughly. It's just about trust, and it's just about listen. And sometimes when I try to go into the nitty gritty of the deal and try to explain this and that and this metric and why we're going to do this and how that transforms into value and, you know, the whole thing, mm-hmm, they're like, listen, dude, like, listen, I don't have this. I don't want to understand it. I understand the business model as a whole. I trust you. I trust your team. Go for it. You know, go make us some money. That's it. There is obviously a level of trust that you need to be at to have that conversation that way, right? But that's kind of
sure.
The, yeah.
And I'm not, by the way, for anybody listening, I'm not anti digging into the numbers or looking at the T12s and T3s. Here's my point, though: when you buy a stock, when you buy Apple stock, are you asking Tim Cook to analysis the numbers, and are you going to argue with his, you know, projections and assumptions? The point is that you would trust that Tim Cook is a competent CEO of the company. He can execute their mission and their business plan, the same with Steve Jobs and any other publicly traded asset. These are not that different. We're talking about just essentially a business model and a team, and the team is going to run the business. Do you trust the team? Do they have a proven track record to show that they can actually do this stuff? If so, I mean, you know, dig in a little bit. It's like trust but verify, but at the same time, don't get hung up on the little details about, you know, you didn't put enough in for landscaping budget in 2025. So I'm going to pass on the deal. You know?
Right. Yeah. So now getting a little bit more specific in terms of, I don't know, just maybe one or two top questions that you want to make sure you ask a sponsor. When you're trying to vet them or trying to build a relationship with them.
Sure. Yeah. Well, first and foremost, this is something to really consider. When you make an investment in a private placement real estate deal, they're illiquid investments. Okay. They're not stocks. They're not here's 50K. And then 2 months later, oh, can I get that 50K back? I need it now. No, they're illiquid. You might be able to, but you're either having to find someone to buy your shares or the sponsor may work with you for that, but it may not happen also. So just don't expect that. Don't count on that. So to that point, what are you really doing at the end of the day? You're partnering with someone. You're actually choosing a business partner that you are going to be in communication with for 5 years or 7 years, 10 years. It depends on the business plan length, right? And so you really want to make sure this is a person, like I said earlier, that you get along with and that you like and that's competent. The last thing you want to do is pull the trigger, fund a deal, close, and then realize these people, they never return my emails. They won't answer their phone. I can't get, you know, the monthly updates are incomplete. The data's wrong. Like, no, you got to do your due diligence up front. And that's really what you're betting on. Now, a couple things criteria wise that I always talk about are, just write down, you have to learn this first. Again, education comes first. Right. Get a book, a podcast, a blog article. Figure out what criteria means. And then write down the things that are most important to you in a deal. So for me personally, passive income is my income. So I like monthly distributions. That's a big deal to me. I realize that a lot of investors could care less because they're investing with an IRA or, you know, they got their W-2 and this is just on the side. You may not care. I care. And so that's part of my criteria. I look at break-even occupancy, you know, how many tenants cannot be paying rent or move out potentially where we're still not going to lose money on this deal. I look at the debt structure and I'm looking for longer term debt than what the business plan is. These are all just pieces of criteria. I like B-class assets mostly. I like 200 to 600 unit range in multifamily mostly. I have invested in smaller deals and larger deals, but mostly I like this criteria. But see, I have this all written down and it makes it very easy. When I do get introduced to new groups, I can just basically have a conversation right off that list. Oh, right. You guys invest in the B-class space and multifamily? Oh, okay. Do you do monthly or quarterly distribution? Oh, okay, you do quarterly. And I'm going through this and you're not going to get 100%, you know, checked off the box probably, but I'm looking for a good high percentage of them. You know, if I can get 80% plus of my criteria met, that's probably a deal that I'm going to invest in.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What about a big picture strategy, right? And you kind of mentioned a little bit when you were talking about that you had some positions in equities, like,
let's talk about that because this is really interesting. So the traditional path to wealth, so to speak, that we're all taught through school and in our culture is, you know, that you take on some student debt, you know, and you go to school and then you're working this job and then you got to buy a car and maybe you finance that, you know, and then kids come on the way and that's expensive and, you know, on and on. And you're told to max out your 401ks, max out your IRAs, you know, count on Social Security when you're 60, 70. And so the fact is you really don't have much in terms of wealth or cash flow until your 60s or 70s or 80s, if you're lucky. You know, if you played the cards right and if the stock market, you know, cooperated and all these things. So by reading some books that really changed my perspective on things, I decided, I'm not funding 401ks. I'm not funding IRAs. I don't want anything that's going to say, I'm going to penalize you unless you're over 60. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I want the cash flow now. I want the time freedom. That's such a great term. I use it all the time, freedom. I love it. The ability to do what you want, when you want, as much as you want with your time. It's about creating a lifestyle of preference, of choice. And there's not a lot of choice in having the golden handcuffs as a W-2 employee like I used to be and working till you're 70 and then hopefully you can maybe retire. I don't know. So I just kind of reverse engineered the whole thing. And I said, first of all, I don't want anything with penalties attached to them. I don't want anything that says I have to be 60 or 70 before I can touch it. I want risk adjusted returns. You know, I just structured it through my own LLCs and trusts and things. And, let me share with this quick story. I think this is pretty powerful. This really changed my perspective because it's kind of your question about big picture of what we're talking about. So this is a true story. There's a nurse, her name was Bronnie Ware, and I think she was in Australia. It was around like 2009. She worked in a terminally ill patient care unit, so kind of like a hospice with folks living out their last, you know, days, weeks, months in life. And she would, you know, talk to them naturally as a nurse and get to know them and visit with them. Well, what she started doing is asking them about, you know, some of their regrets in life. And it sounds kind of morbid, but she started with building a blog post about this, the top regrets of the dying. That later turned into a book. She later turned into a speaker and, you know, the story goes on. But this is what's interesting. Out of all those folks that she spoke with, the top two regrets of the dying were, I never pursued my dreams and aspirations, and I didn't spend enough time with my friends and family. And that really it still gives me chills. Every time I just say, I have chills right now, it's crazy. Because it's just, that is what's most important. You know what I mean? It may be some variation of these two things. And there's far more regrets, of course, that she goes into in her books and blogs. But to think about, so how can you get to a point where you're pursuing your dreams and aspirations? How can you get to a point where you can spend more time with friends and family? Well, to me, the big picture is, if you have more passive income that you don't have to work for rolling in, and that covers your lifestyle expenses, then that frees up your time. That's what time freedom is. That gives you options to, oh, I'm going to switch from full-time work to part-time work. I'm going to become a consultant, you know, or a contractor, or I'm going to pivot careers because I really don't like the job I do. I want to try this. And I have a safety net because I have passive income that's, you know, subsidizing that, right? Yeah. Or I'm just going to retire, you know, I'm whatever, 50 years old and yeah. I don't want to work till I'm 70. I'm done right now. It, so it's just about options to your point. It's not the get rich quick. It's not that you have three Lamborghinis and the Hollywood mansion. Yeah. It's just that you have flexibility and freedom over your time. And to me, that story is kind of the foundational piece to my big picture strategy.
Yeah, man. Well, I think we're going to close the interview right there because I think that's super powerful. That's the message that I'm trying to put out there just like you are. I'm working on that through this podcast, through all my books and stuff. It's that same thing because I see it. I see how it benefits my family, and I see how some of my investors are now more happy because they've told me so, to say, hey, man, you know, this is awesome. Because, you know, I'm glad that I found this vehicle. And again, it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be multifamily. It's just really, or even real estate, like you mentioned at the beginning, it's just finding a vehicle that allows you to have, you know, passive income at the end of the day, that's going to cover your expenses. That's going to allow you to have time freedom. And then of course you have that, but then you have other stuff that you want to have. Well, that's the cash flow part, but you want to make sure you don't lose your money. That's to begin with, because that's the money that's working for you over, you know, while you're sleeping. So how do you know, how do you position yourself to not lose capital? Well, there are strategies. I'm sure you guys have strategies as well. And what you do, right? But it doesn't really matter. It's just, okay, don't lose money. Like Warren Buffett says, that's rule number one and number two. Don't lose money. And then, well, how do I have that money generate passive income for myself? And then, well, if I can grow it so that it can grow into something more that I can leave as a legacy to my family, well, I mean, that's awesome, even better, right? Well, real estate, specifically multifamily, and through this vehicle, which gives you the passive aspect of things, I think it's a good option, right? So just to close now, man, there's a question that we like to ask at the end, and shout out to Willie's House and the School of Greatness. We're stealing that one from you. As long as we're not big enough, they're not going to notice. So it's all good for now.
For now.
Yeah. Anyway, so here's the question, Travis. Let's say you need you're going to pass on to a better life today, and all this interview, all the content, all the interviews that you've done in the past or books you've written, anything that you've put out there in terms of content and education, you need to take with you. You only have a piece of paper and a pen for you to write one, two, or three, or whatever, however many truths or things that are true to you that you live your life by, that you want to live to your kids or to your loved ones. What would that be? What would that say?
Yeah. There's a few that come to mind. One is a quote that I use all the time by Tony Robbins, and it's that most people. Hold on one second. most people think that they can achieve, too much in 1 year, but they underestimate what they can achieve in a decade. I'm butchering up the quote, but yeah, basically, it's something to that effect. So, in other words, set your sights on a longer time frame. Yeah. I know everyone wants to get rich quick and be a millionaire by next year, and all these, you know, have a six pack abs in 30 days. But, you know, it just doesn't work like that. You know, just give yourself an adequate time frame to achieve those things, and they will come with enough persistence and consistency to them. The other quote that comes to mind is from like 2000 years ago, Marcus Aurelius quote, everything we hear is an opinion, not a fact. Everything we see is a perspective, not the truth. And I love that because, you know, everybody's a guru these days, at the end of the day, we all have our perspectives and opinions, and somebody listening to this might disagree with every single word I've said, and someone else may have just had that epiphany light bulb go off and say, this is the path I want to take. And none of that matters except what you want to do, what's right for you, right?
Yeah, love it, love it. Yeah, do you, man, do you, do you. That's all that matters. Awesome, man. Travis, thank you very much for joining us. If someone wants to continue the conversation with you, wants to, you know, pick your brain, or even if they're interested in investing with alongside you on one of those Ashcroft deals in multifamily, or, you know, just get in contact with you, what would the best way be?
Sure. There's a couple of things I give out for free to folks who are looking to learn. They're at the same spot. So you can go to ashcroftcapital.com/connect-with-Travis. Okay. And on that landing page, what you'll see is my calendar link. If you want to set up a free 15-minute Q&A call, we don't even have to have a conversation about multifamily or Ashcroft stuff. But if you just want to talk real estate, or, you know, things that I do, or just pick my brain or whatever, I give my time away to everybody and anybody. So take advantage of that. If you don't want to set up a call, I understand. I give out a PDF guide. It's called Understanding Real Estate Private Placements. Yep. It's about a 20-page download, no upsell, no sales pitch. It's just straight industry terminology, how to vet a deal, a market, a sponsor, questions to ask, you know, red flags to look out for. It's got a lot of content packed in there. Feel free to download that at the same place.
Awesome. Awesome. There you have it, guys. Go grab that one. I'm sure that's going to be a super value for everyone. I'm going to switch to Spanish. Si consiguieron valor en esta entrevista, por favor, déjenos saber, compartan, denle like y déjenos un review en iTunes, que eso nos ayuda muchísimo. Si es bueno o si es malo, no importa, siempre que sea honesto. Lo agradecemos. En todas las redes sociales estamos a través de Se Habla Real Estate, excepto Twitter, que es Se Habla RE. Y bueno, de resto, ya saben, compartan, por favor. Nos ayudaría muchísimo. Y bueno, nos vemos en el próximo episodio.